Well, the federal agency responsible for marine endangered species announced this week it is considering a ban on recreational and commercial fishing for Pacific bluefin tuna. Scientists say the species stands at less than 5% of its historic numbers. And it may not be that we in America are the ones eating it. Much of the seafood caught here is sent abroad, and much of the seafood caught abroad is sent here. And that bothers author Paul Greenberg, whose new book is called American Catch, The Fight for Our Local Seafood. He joins us now. Paul Greenberg, welcome to Here and Now.
Hey, thanks, Jeremy.
And when we say local seafood, one of the things that is so shocking in this book is that 90% of the seafood we eat in the U.S. is now imported, even though we ourselves are exporting a whole lot of our own seafood.
That's right. I mean, we're sending abroad about a third of what we catch, and that's, you know, around 3 billion pounds of seafood. So it's a conundrum.
And why are we doing that?
It boils down a lot to price. Americans do not like to pay a lot for their food in general, and their seafood in particular, they're not so interested in paying a lot of money for. So the seafood that we're importing, generally speaking, is pretty low-end stuff. Shrimp, which is, you know, by far the most consumed seafood in America, we eat almost as much shrimp as tuna and salmon, the next two most popular combined. It's also a lot of tilapia, and it's also a fish that most people don't even know about called the Pangasius catfish. Hmm. They're all real cheap, and what we're exporting are really high-value things, a lot of salmon, black cod, which, you know, Nobu famously made into his black cod with miso dish. You know, that might be fine on the tables of Nobu, but how many Americans actually get there? Meanwhile, back in Japan and China and other places in Asia, they like really good wild fish, and they're ready to pay the good money for it.
Well, and as you write, the fact that we do that, that we have that strange swap where we're sending seafood overseas and also bringing in seafood here, okay, fine, that's what we're doing. But it's also causing environmental problems right here in the U.S. that aren't about just all the diesel that's used to ship that stuff overseas.
Right. No, what I think it's doing is it's effectively detaching the American citizen from his or her own coast. You know, you look back at what we did have in terms of seafood infrastructure 100-odd years ago. This country was one of the world, if not the world's largest producer of oysters. New York City produced many, many millions of pounds of oysters. And the average New Yorker, as recently as 1920, ate 600 local New York City oysters a year.
Yeah.
Now they eat zero. What that to me indicates is that we've abandoned a lot of waterways as food systems, and instead we've turned them kind of into waste disposal systems. So all over the East Coast, there are estuaries that really should be seafood systems, but they're not anymore, precisely because now we can rely on things like cheap Asian shrimp to supply something that, you know, our estuaries should be supplying here at home.
Well, and you talk a lot in this book about those oysters in New York, oysters that there used to be, you say, trillions of them in and around New York City. And now they're almost none.
Yeah. I mean, there were trillions and trillions. They turned over the water column every few weeks, you know, because one oyster can filter 50 gallons of water in a single day. So imagine when there are trillions of them, you know, you would have a much cleaner marine environment. Today, it should be said that it isn't all our fault right here and now. No pun intended. Our ancestors who really did the serious damage to the wild oyster reefs of New York City, the original Dutch colonists and then the British after them came to New York and they found these huge oyster reefs and they just mined them out very, very quickly so that by 1820, the wild oyster reefs of New York City were gone. But what happened after that was that you had this tremendous blooming of an oyster farming industry, the very first aquaculture that we really did. And it grew and grew and grew. We were growing 2 billion pounds of oysters every single year, a huge, huge resource. You know, there's an old Yiddish expression, don't poop where you eat. It's a little cruder in its off-air model. But that's essentially what we did in New York. We turned New York Harbor into an open sewage system. 600 million gallons of sewage went into the waters of New York City every day, if you can believe it. And then beyond that, once we started to associate oysters with disease that this very sewage was causing, then we were like, oh, forget about it. And we dumped everything in. All sorts of industrial chemicals went into New York Harbor. Dioxins from The manufacture of Agent Orange even went into New York City estuaries. It's just kind of amazing.
Well, and it becomes a vicious circle because once you dump all of that into the water and the oysters can't live there, you lose the filtration system as well.
That's right. And, you know, I think I say in the book somewhere that there's no more intimate relationship you can have with your environment than to eat from it. Once we stopped eating from the environment in New York City, we really let the environment go to hell. My fear is, you know, it's not like we're not going to see New York oysters on the menu anytime soon, perhaps never, perhaps not in my lifetime. But this kind of process is happening in coastal systems all around the country. And, you know, we have to at certain point say, stop it. This is a food system. It's not just a system to hold our wastewater. It is actually a food system that we need to protect.
And you write in your book that the people trying to do that got very close, and then in 2010, something happened and it involved the newly elected governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie. Tell us what happened.
New York Harbor is split in ownership between New York and New Jersey. And on the New York side, they were having a lot of conflicts with municipal authorities about trying to reintroduce oysters, precisely because people were worried that if you put oysters back into the water, somebody might, oh my God, eat them. And then they might get sick, and then some city authority would get blamed. Well, they had all these problems on the New York side, so they decided to really focus their efforts on the New Jersey side. And things went swimmingly. They were really progressing. They started a project in Keyport Harbor, which is in view of the New York City skyline, and it was going pretty well. But then the administration changed. Chris Christie came in. But his new environmental administration did not like this oyster restoration experiment. One day, the DEC came in and basically said, you got to shut this down. We do not want market-sized oysters growing within the range of where humans could potentially harvest them. And they made the organization that put them there, New York, New Jersey Baykeeper, haul out this multi-thousand-dollar project of oyster restoration, hauled them out onto the shore and sit there and watched while they chipped the oysters off of the reef balls and threw them in a dumpster.
This was because there's a strong oyster industry off the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, I mean, so New Jersey is a kind of two states. Southern Jersey is a huge shellfish producer, produces a lot of oysters, blue crab, all kinds of things are grown and thrive in New Jersey waters. And oystermen down south seem to have been really nervous about the idea of New York City oysters appearing again. Their worry was that, well, what if a New York City oyster, even though it wasn't meant to be eaten, it was only for restoration purposes, but what if one of those oysters were to make its way into the greater New Jersey shellfish supply and somebody were to get sick? What if that happened? Then they might shut us all down. There's a huge amount of fear around seafood in general. There was one producer in the book that I quoted who said that, you know, somebody gets sick eating a lobster in Florida and people are going to stop eating clams in Maine.
Paul Greenberg, I love seafood. I love to eat it. And I wonder when I go into the store to buy some, is there any way to really get sustainable seafood, even if you're buying locally?
So there are a number of new entities coming into being which are called community-supported fisheries or CSFs. It's kind of equivalent to like a CSA is, you know, with A being agriculture. You can buy a share from these CSFs at the outset of the season, and they will provide for you a share of their catch throughout the fishing season. And what's great for you is that, you know, you have traceability. You know that this fisherman is providing the fish that was caught in their local waters.
But if somebody is going to the supermarket and buying salmon that is farmed, you know, in Asia, is that a problem? Are they doing something bad for the environment?
Well, first of all, there's not to my knowledge, really salmon being farmed in Asia. Most of the salmon that's coming to us from Asia, and this is weird, it's wild Alaska salmon that we catch in Alaska. We freeze it. We send it to China or to Thailand or wherever. It's defrosted, boned, filleted, and frozen again, and then sent back to us. It's twice frozen.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's the salmon out there that have more frequent flyer miles than I do. actually, they go by boat, if we want to be serious. I think that you have to think about your seafood choices based on the reputation of the seller. There is a Greenpeace report called Carting Away the Oceans, where they went through and essentially audited supermarkets in the United States to determine who had the best seafood buying policies. And I believe at the top you had Whole Foods and Wegmans and Safeway. And recently, after they made some changes, Trader Joe's actually, I think, is in the number four spot. You know, it's seafood is tricky. And, you know, a major thing and a major thing I would call for in this country is we need much better seafood labeling. We need to know where the fish was caught. We need to know where it was processed. Because one really crazy thing is that you can have a fish that, say, is grown in China. The fish comes over here. If we turn it into a fish stick and then export it, it is called product of the USA.
Even though it was grown in China.
Correct.
But we're also doing bad things to the fish that is grown here and sold here. And I'm talking about the overfishing of cod in the Northeast, for example.
Yeah. I mean, we have to be a little careful, I think, when we use the term overfishing, not because it's not real. It is very real. But because this country has done considerable things to try to solve its overfishing problem. In 1996, there was an addenda put on to the Magnuson-Stevens Act called the Sustainable Fisheries Act, which defined overfishing for the first time, really, and mandated the rebuilding of all American wild stocks. And this is essentially what's been going on for the last 20 years, to the point where we now have about 30 stocks that have been rebuilt, you know, though some people take issues with the benchmark of rebuilding. And there, you know, many fish are coming back. Now, Atlantic cod, Georgia's Bank cod, Gulf of Maine cod, not coming back the way we had hoped.
Paul Greenberg, you've been all over the place with this book. It's been doing very well. And public radio listeners have probably already heard you in other places. Is there something that you found while putting this together that you haven't been asked about and that you're surprised you haven't been asked about?
One of the things that people don't seem to be focusing on is the very, very strong ecological issue at the center of the book, which is the loss of this kind of unknown ecosystem called a salt marsh. Salt marshes are at the margins between fresh and salt in our estuarian environments. And they're marshy and they're mucky and they're yucky and they smell bad. But they are actually amazing. An acre of salt marsh sequesters more carbon than any other ecosystem on Earth, even more than, say, a tropical rainforest. And in addition to that, 70% of our seafood requires a salt marsh for some point in its life. And we've seen epic, epic loss of salt marsh, something like 70, 80%. And, you know, I almost wanted to do a T-shirt that would, would say, it's the salt marsh, stupid. you know, people focus on overfishing. Overfishing is important. But essential marine habitat, something that the people at NOAA talk about a lot, is just that. It is essential. And we need to restore salt marsh. We need to stop losing salt marsh and just say salt marsh over and over again until the message sinks in.
Paul Greenberg is the author of American Catch, The Fight for Our Local Seafood. And we've got more at our website, hereandnow.org. Paul Greenberg, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Jeremy.